Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Ohio may not be the first state that comes to mind when talking about the great outdoors. The western states of Colorado or Montana might be a little more well-known for their natural wonders. However, Ohio residents know there's a wide variety of outdoor adventures and activities to be found right here in the heart of it all. And the Buckeye State is being highlighted in the IMAX film, Ohio Wild at Heart. We're talking about the film this hour and what Ohio is doing to protect natural habitats and wildlife. Joining us now is Mary Mertz, Director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to All Sides, Mary.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Jenny Richards, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park. Welcome to All Sides, Jenny.
Thank you.
So, Mary, this is a beautiful film. I mean, it makes Ohio look, Ohio is beautiful, but it makes Ohio look very beautiful. Who is this film for? Is it for the people of Ohio, or is it for, you want to bring in some tourists?
Well, it is for both. Mm-hmm. So I think it's for all the people of Ohio, too. It's a kind of film that, you know, little kids can enjoy, middle schoolers, high schoolers, and adults. So we hope it will appeal to all age groups and all abilities. As far as bringing in tourists, because we're playing it at major museum sites around the state, we hope tourists will see it there and encourage their friends to come to Ohio.
Mm. Now, how long was it in production? Like, who came up with this idea to make this film, and like, how did you get it from A to B?
Yeah, so a long time in the making. So I think it was back in 2019, you know, Governor DeWine really threw down the challenge. Be creative, be innovative, figure out how to get people's attention and educate them about Ohio's beautiful outdoors and conservation and, you know, work toward the future. And so the idea simmered for a long time. It was on a list, a lot of conversation, a lot of thinking, we can't do that. That is beyond our reach. That's beyond our capability. That's, you know, that's too big. We can't do that. And it really wasn't until I saw Ducks Unlimited produced some great IMAX films. Mm-hmm. And I was actually on a hunting trip with their chief conservation officer. We had a great conversation about it. And I discovered it is doable. You know, the costs weren't over the moon, that it was something we would be able to put together and use effectively. At the end of the day, it was only a year of filming. Mm-hmm. So once the filming started, it's a year to complete that and get a finished product. But the idea simmered for many years before that.
Okay. And Jenny, you are in the movie.
Yeah.
And what was it like to have a film crew come to your work and maybe follow you around a little bit?
It was awesome. They were with me for 8 hours for a whole shift, and I was still running my nature center and doing my programs for the day, and they just kind of filmed that, and I invited a bunch of local kids to join me to be in the film, and it was a huge honor, and the film crew were so down to earth and so wonderful to all of us, but they worked us hard. Mm. They did. It was great.
Did they make you do things over and over again?
Over and over, yes. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So did you pick maybe like your favorite program or your favorite thing to do since you knew you were being filmed that day?
Well, I already had a program that day. I had a kayaking program first thing in the morning. And I said, well, I have a kayaking program. My nature center will be open. And these are some things that you could probably film and would turn out really well. So
yeah.
It was fun.
Films and kayaks and all that equipment does not make me feel comfortable.
They
did you?
Had
I mean,
drones.
You didn't have to worry about that. Yeah,
they had drones and they had all the equipment. They knew what they were doing, and they all interacted so much with all of the children that I invited along, and it was really fun.
Yeah, Mary, I think drones played a big role in this. There were several drone shots, right?
Yes, there's quite a few, and the production company that we selected, it was an RFP process. There's only a handful of them in the United States that make IMAX films. Mm-hmm. So we got a very experienced, very well-equipped group with a great reputation to do this film.
Yeah, later in the hour, we're going to be talking to the director, and he's kind of well-known for making IMAX movies.
Yes.
IMAX movies, right?
Yes.
Did you decide from the beginning that it was going to be IMAX, or did that come later?
No, I think from the very beginning, because we were already producing lots of videos, mm-hmm. and there had long been a show called Wild Ohio that I think shows on PBS, and mm-hmm. You know, so those things had been around. We want something huge. We wanted to be impactful. We wanted it to be different. So it was IMAX from the get-go, but yeah, we got a great group to produce it.
Jenny, how long have you been a naturalist?
28 years. Actually, my whole life. I've always been outside. I love outside, but I've had the honor to work for ODNR for 28 years now.
So over those 28 years, how have visitors who come to your programs, how have they changed? Are they the same as they were 28 years ago, or are they different in the questions they ask?
Well, I think that's a hard question. Mm-hmm. 28 years ago when I started, people didn't have cell phones. Mm. So that's a little bit of a difference, that people didn't come out with their phones. It was families coming out with all their children and coming to all the programs. And it seemed like programs were really, really well attended. And they still are. But I think there's a little bit of a distraction in keeping people. Maybe people are doing things on their own more because there are all these great apps out there like Merlin and Seek that you can go out on a walk and you can use your phone and that'll tell you what things are, what birds are singing, what snail you're looking at. It's just amazing all this technology that we have that helps us learn more about nature. So we're still getting people at our programs, but I think that the demographic has changed a little bit over time.
I had a master gardener on the show who was kind of a purist at eyeball identification, and mm-hmm. she said those apps are wrong sometimes.
Well, everything's wrong sometimes, yeah. You know, even people.
Yes, that's exactly. True. That's yeah. True. Do you like the apps to help identify plants?
I use
plants?
Them, and mm-hmm. I think they're great for engaging children who want to have their phones with them. Mm-hmm. If I can share those apps with kids, then that's a way that I can do both. We can use this phone and we can go outside and explore in nature and use our phone. So I think that's a great thing to share those adventures on using technology with kids.
And it sounds like, I mean, you made a point to feature kids as a part of your programs in the film. You teach junior naturalists. Why is it important to share knowledge with young people?
Well, because the young people kind of rule the world. We all love them so much. They're just full of enthusiasm and life. And when we empower them and bring them into the whole situation, allow them to help run the Nature Center. I have a little crew of volunteer naturalists. And people love it when they come in and they see a young person with a uniform and a visor that says ODNR and a name tag. And they just know what's going on in the Nature Center. And people just absolutely love that. So I think just empowering our youth to know that they can make a difference. One person does matter, and it means everything to me, helping young people become a naturalist and, you know, learn more about the great outdoors and then share that love that they have.
Yeah, and Mary, I know it's beyond just Shawnee State Park. I mean, having young people be invested and care about nature, that's featured throughout this film. There's multiple parks that you go to where you're featuring children involved. So can you talk to me about the importance of the children's programs?
Yeah, I mean, they're the future. And we need to engage them, educate them, get them excited. And actually, Jenny has one of my favorite lines in the entire movie when she says, "We want them to fall in love with the outdoors because that is the only way they're going to care about it in the future." And so that is important. And that's why, you know, it's not just this movie, but we have renovated and updated nature centers across the entire state. We have a high school advisory council to help us understand what high schoolers are interested in and how they can get involved in conservation. We have so many kids programs, the things we do with Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and, you know, every youth group, you know, that's known, we engage with them in some way.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ohio's natural wonders and conservation legacy, which is highlighted in the film Ohio Wild at Heart, with Mary Mertz, director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and Jenny Richards, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park, who also appears in the film. So I mentioned it's IMAX. So Ohio Wild at Heart will be available to view at COSI. So you can see it there in an IMAX theater. But aren't there other ways to see it too?
Yes. So there are places around the state where you can see it. We've opened it at the Cincinnati Museum Center, mm-hmm. the Dayton Boonshoft Museum of Natural History, the Toledo Imagination Station, COSAI this week, and in another week, we'll open it up at the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. Mm-hmm. Later, it will be at the Great Lakes Science Center in Cleveland as well. So those are sort of all the places with the big screens, but it's also available at a number of AMC theaters as well. So if you go to the website about the movie, it'll show you what AMC theaters it'll be playing at.
Oh, so can I just like buy a ticket at the AMC theater and go see it?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So, and I also noticed on your website that's promoting the film that it seems like you really want field trips to go see this too.
We do.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
We do. We want field trips there's a lot of field trips anyway, mm-hmm. where kids are coming to these science centers. And mm-hmm. so we want to take advantage of that. So we have a curriculum guide for mm-hmm. teachers that aligns with the state science standards to help them meet some of those requirements. And we are very hopeful they will use that. We want kids to come to these places so they can see the other things as well, right? I mean, our department, we consider ourselves a member of the local community where we work. We try to support the local economy. We want these museums to be successful. But that being said, at some point next year, we will make the film available for classrooms. Mm-hmm. So some classes are never going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But we want teachers to be able to show it in the classroom and use the curriculum guide and make it a part of their program.
Why is it important to you for kids all over Ohio to see this movie?
You know, because if they don't get excited about how beautiful and how fun and how interesting it is, they're not going to keep it for the future. I mean, you know, we're talking about public land here. It belongs to all of those kids. We want them to check it out and love it and keep it for the future.
What was some of the biggest challenges in making the film? Like, just from a production standpoint, was it deciding what to keep in and what you ended up editing out?
Yeah, I mean,
It doesn't have every state park featured. It doesn't have every natural wonder featured. So how did you decide that?
Right. 76 state parks, yeah. 150 plus nature preserves, over 150 wildlife areas. So very difficult. And we gave lots of options to the production team. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was kind of good. They could objectively from the outside, based on their experience and not being in the middle of it, they could pick what would work and what wouldn't. You know, some of our most important places aren't covered because mm-hmm. maybe they didn't lend themselves to the IMAX format, or just at the end of the day, you wanted a balance. We wanted to talk about the summer and the fall and the winter and the spring, and, you know, different parks lend themselves to that and to show the different activities. It was really hard. I think some of the people who might be even a little bit disappointed in the film mm-hmm. would be our own employees, because the things that they do aren't covered. But it's only 45 minutes, so you can't even come close to covering all the really cool things that are going on.
Did you talk about making it longer?
You can't. This is the standard. You know, these museum centers won't show it if it's longer. In fact, one of them is only going to show a 25-minute version of it, because that's what they find that their audience,
I see,
you know, appreciates. So we want to meet the consumer. We don't want to produce something because we think it's cool. We want to meet the consumer and provide something that they're going to watch and love.
Did your favorite state park or your favorite location make it? Or are you not allowed to have a favorite because you're in charge?
I do not have a favorite. They are all my favorites, every one of them.
So, Jenny, your favorite made it in, right? If you're in there.
Yeah. Shawnee is my favorite. It's my home, too. I was raised in Shawnee, and I just love the vastness of that forest. It's a 68,000-acre forest, and the park is just nestled in the center of it. And it's like a biodiversity hotspot of the state. People come there to see all that we have to see in Ohio, and it's right along the Ohio River. It's so beautiful. But there are lots of great places that I love besides Shawnee in Ohio.
What part of Shawnee is featured in the film? Like, tell me a little bit about how Shawnee is showcased.
Well, it flies over the forest a little, so you can see the giant forest. But it shows our beautiful lakes and the Nature Center area. And it shows it's a forest. It's just a magnificent forest.
And it's a cool perspective on Appalachian Ohio, too, because, you know, people from here might not think of all the rolling hills, right?
Yeah, it's the foothills. It's unglaciated. It's rugged and lovely.
The film is narrated by Columbus native and two-time Heisman Trophy winner, Ohio State standout Archie Griffin. Why was he selected to narrate?
You know, he is so well-known and respected in Ohio. And we were excited. He was excited to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he values the outdoors, and we were excited to have him. So I don't know, just a meeting of the minds. And mm-hmm. we just thought he would be a super spokesperson for it. So we are very grateful to him for doing this.
Did you have a list of people who were possible narrators, or was he like the guy and you were like, let's see if he'll say yes?
We kicked around a lot of ideas. We also had a little bit of an in. So our lieutenant governor and our governor helped us secure him. So, you know, I think their phone calls made a difference for sure.
So. Oh, okay. So Jim Tressel called him and said, will you narrate this film, please?
Yes.
We are talking about the Natural Wonders of Ohio with Mary Mertz, director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and Jenny Richards, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park, who appears in the film. Coming up, we're going to talk about what Ohio is doing to protect our natural wonders and what it can continue to do in the future. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The Great Outdoors of Ohio is hitting the big screen. The natural wonders of the Buckeye State are being showcased in the new film, Ohio Wild at Heart. We're talking about the film this hour and about Ohio's natural beauty. Later, we'll hear from the film's director. But right now, we're going to look at what Ohio is doing to protect our natural wonders and what it can continue to do in the future. Still with us is Mary Mertz, director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Thanks for being here, Mary.
Thank you.
And Jenny Richards, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park, who is also featured in the film. Thanks for being here, Jenny.
My pleasure.
So the film references the Cuyahoga River fire from the 1960s to exemplify the precarious health of Ohio's environment at the time. So in this era of climate change, how is Ohio doing when it comes to protecting its environment?
Yeah, so I think when you look at conservation and environmental protection across the state, it might be a little bit of a mixed bag, right? Because it's not all within our control. So our movie highlights some real success stories. And we want to tell those success stories to give people hope and optimism and some realization that if you're very intentional, if you are intentional on species and you make sure they have the habitat that they need, you can be successful. But there's no doubt there are other species whose populations are declining. So mm-hmm. I think there's a beautiful piece in the movie about the bird watching up on the shores of Lake Erie, mm-hmm. right? The warblers. Well, we know warbler populations are going down. But it's interesting when you say, you know, conservation in Ohio. So we are very careful to preserve those areas to have a landing place for those warblers. But their story extends from Canada mm-hmm. all the way down to, you know, Central America and, you know, sometimes even further. And so if we don't have great conservation and habitat the whole way, you know, what we do can't fix the problem. Mm-hmm. So we're still seeing those populations decline. So we try to support our friends in Canada with habitat development. And, you know, so it's a bigger picture. It's a bigger picture than just Ohio. But I think we've been successful with a lot of species that are within our boundaries and definitely supportive of those that are migrating.
And compared to the time of the river fire on the Cuyahoga River, how do you feel our river health is now?
Absolutely better. Without a question, better.
Nothing's on fire.
Yeah, nothing's on fire. Unquestionably much better. But are we completely there yet? I don't think we are, which is one of the reasons why in the H2 Ohio program, which really started with how do we get rid of the toxic algae blooms on Lake Erie, it developed an entire rivers segment to it now. So we're very focused on all those tributaries flowing into our big rivers, and we're doing things like removing dams and doing huge litter pickup programs and making sure we are very protective of the riparian areas and the riverbanks along the river. So that is an entire initiative addressing acid mine drainage. I mean, there are a lot of threats to Ohio's rivers, and if we are not vigilant, it will get worse. So we are vigilant, and I think it continues to get better.
And Jenny, at Shawnee State Park, you mentioned there's lakes and you have the rivers right there. Do you see any water quality concerns, or what are you working on in your park?
We do annual spring cleanup in March, and we clean up waterways, roadways. We are always working to engage the community to come out and help keep the stream corridors clean. And I think the streams are great in Shawnee. Mm-hmm. All the forest around the streams really helps filter, you know, the water before it ends up back in the mm-hmm. rainwater before it ends up back in the stream. So mm-hmm. I think all of our streams are so incredible down there. Clear. You can see all the colors of the rocks in the bottom, and it's really beautiful.
And I wanted to talk about, you know, besides rivers, the film also mentions protecting trees and the future of trees. An example that is given is working on protecting the hemlocks in Hocking Hills. Can you talk about that, Mary?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, hemlocks are noted for how incredibly beautiful they mm-hmm. are, and they are key features at many of our parks. And they have been attacked by the hemlock woolly adelgid, which is this tiny little bug. And I don't have the best eyes. Even when someone's showing it to me, I can't even see it. It's like the head of a pin, right? And they are on the bottom of the branches of hemlocks. And, you know, they are eventually will lead to the mortality of the tree. So we have been very aggressive in trying to treat that. It's primarily with chemicals, which you don't love to use, right? Because you're always, you know, what are we going to learn 20 years from now? But we do have some chemical treatments on the branches and that we can inject at the base of the tree. And so our forestry division has really been leading that charge, and they are out there. So it's not just Hocking Hills where there's so many hemlocks, but we have them at other places around the state. And we're not seeing a lot of destruction yet. Mm-hmm. That's why we got to stay on it.
Is this bug invasive? Like, has it always been
yes.
around?
It is invasive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the problem with some of our other trees that have suffered, like the ash mm-hmm. tree, right? We've yeah. lost so many mature ash tree around the state due to the emerald ash borer, an invasive species. And that's disappointing, but, you know, we're working. It didn't take the small ones. And we have discovered there are some mature ones that were resistant. So there's a lot of research going on. How do we, you know, create the right opportunity for future ash growth? This, other trees as well.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about Ohio's natural wonders and conservation legacy highlighted in the new film, Ohio Wild at Heart. With us is Mary Mertz, director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and Jenny Richards is with us, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park, who also appeared in the film. And there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the idea of fracking and natural gas, and we're allowing it in the state parks, near the state parks, right? How do you balance that? As you're in charge of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, but then you hear from the governor that this is a revenue source, this is a need for the energy future of Ohio. How do you view that for your job?
So our department also has the oil and gas division, mm-hmm. and so I have a lot of confidence in the professionals in that division to ensure safety. Mm-hmm. People with a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge of the industry. And I think they have done a good job of making sure people and places stay safe, right? There's always a little bit of the unknown, but I think these are experienced professionals. And as long as we're allowing fracking in other parts of the state, it's unclear to me how that's different under a state park. Mm. So, I mean, it's thousands of feet underground, and that's where the drilling and fracking occur. And we haven't seen any impacts that have occurred. We've been able to respond to and be nimble and to change what the requirements and expectations are. So I'm not worried for the safety of people or land with respect to that. But it is still a challenge. And people care very much about mm-hmm. it. And I I listen to those people. I mean, you know, I want to hear what all comers have to say. Mm-hmm. And you must know it's a pretty excited group. I don't know what the word.
It's a contentious issue.
It is a contentious issue, and I respect that, right?
It is interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that your department is in charge of all of these different things because it's a natural resource, right? You're like, oh, why is my department named this? I have to be in charge of everything.
and our mission is to ensure the wise use of natural resources mm-hmm. for the benefit of all. Mm-hmm. Right. So that is, you know, within the agency, we are doing that balancing all the time. You know, how much energy exploitation can occur without it having a negative impact? And that's, you know, that's what we try to facilitate.
And you're supposed to get more money from this, too, for the parks, right? Like what it's near, isn't there going to be more like some of the revenue goes directly back into the park that it's near?
Yes. So Salt Fork is the only park where drilling has occurred so mm-hmm. far. And of the revenue that has come in from the initial bonus payment, 30% of it the park was able to use for capital improvements. So they're very excited. And it's our largest state park, mm-hmm. If you put aside your forest. It's our largest state park. And so we've made some really important improvements there. I'm excited about.
I will speak from the heart. Salt Fork is my favorite state park okay. because all of my family's from Western Pennsylvania. And Salt Fork is exactly halfway between Columbus and Pittsburgh. And so we meet there at the beach and we go to like the Salt Fork State Park Lodge fairly often. So my favorite park. And it's not in the movie.
Well, I don't know the last time you've been there, but we just finished renovating the rooms at
yes.
Salt Fork.
I haven't stayed in a room recently, but I know about the new nature center. Yes.
It is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you'll see at the beach, we just demolished the 70-year-old beach house there, and there'll be a new pavilion and new infrastructure down there next year. So
yes, I'm very excited for that. The last time I was there, one of the naturalists who worked in the old nature center told me this is the last time I would see it. It was going away. And
yeah.
No offense to it, but it needed a little facelift.
Absolutely.
We're talking about the film Ohio Wild at Heart with Mary Mertz, director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, and Jenny Richards, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park, who also appears in the film. Jenny, have you seen the film? Okay,
yes,
just making sure.
I have, and I took my family to see it at the Cincinnati Museum Center last Sunday.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite part besides the part that you're in?
Definitely the part of the kids that are young birders. I love birds. I named both my children after birds. So.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, I loved that part. That was really inspiring to see all those kids out there birding and being inspired by watching birds. I mean, it's incredible.
So the part of the film you're talking about is the biggest week in American birding. Am I saying that name
yes.
correctly? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest week in American birding is up near Toledo. And there were all these young birders who were there. I guess it was filmed during that week and they were all looking for birds for their bird list. Yeah.
There's about a 2-week period where warblers stop there to gather their energy on the way north to Canada. And so the trees, bushes, areas are just full of beautiful warblers.
Speaking of birds, I wanted to talk about the part of the film where it talks about the success with bald eagles. So there was a period of time when there were no bald eagles in Ohio or very few, but now we have our fair share, right?
Yeah, back in the 70s, they counted only 4 nesting pairs, right? So that and from there, we've come up to 1,000 nesting pairs. And so it's an incredible comeback story. And and so we sort of feature it at the beginning and close with that as well. But I mean, that's just a great example. If you're intentional and you develop the right habitat, and I think one thing that made a difference was stopping using some of the chemicals that were impacting the birds and their eggs. So, you know, that change plus the habitat development and, you know, there was a time to you know, really promote them and protect them. And that's what happened. And we see success now.
Another bird that's featured is your success with the trumpeter swan. Can you tell me about that?
Right. And that's one where eggs were brought in from all sorts of places to bring to the nests and to encourage birds to bring those young ones up. So that one, the ODNR was very involved, you know, hands-on in how to make that happen. And so we're excited to see that return as well. See, these are You can have success if you really focus on it.
And Jenny, are there any special conservation needs at Shawnee State Park that you'd like to talk about, or any special conservation efforts?
I can't think of any needs that we have down there. We have a whole bunch of really great native plant meadows. I think that's one of the most important things that we can share with people about how we can all make a difference in our own backyards by using native plants. So we highlight tons of native plant meadows in Shawnee State Park to try to raise the awareness of using native plants in your own ecosystem to create biodiversity, which is what we all want and need to survive.
And the film makes a special point to say that all naturalist programs in Ohio State Parks are free.
Yeah.
How important is that, do you think, having them be free?
Oh, I think it's great because it makes them accessible to everyone. And that's another wonderful thing about Ohio State Parks. They're free. Mm-hmm. Not all of the state park systems in the United States are free. Actually, just a handful of them, and we're still one of those. So everyone can get there, hopefully. If they have a way of getting there, they can get in.
Is it... Mary, is it rare to have everything be free?
I think there's only 7 state parks that offer free admission now. Mm-hmm. And that might happen a number of different ways. Like in some states, there's a very steep parking fee if you're going to park anywhere, or a ramp fee to put your boat in the water. I think it has been important to governors over time. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, this governor, having raised 8 kids in the state of Ohio, I suspect he and the first lady were always looking for free things to do with 8 kids, because what else do you do, right? Mm-hmm. So I think he has a particular affinity for it. But, you know, I mean, it's amazing when you see the families and the kids that turn out, you know, nearby Alum Creek. I don't know if you've ever been up there in the summer. Mm-hmm. I mean, the beach can be packed on the weekends. Where the boats go in, I mean, they're parked all over. Mm-hmm. It can't be big enough, right? And that's just right here. So many of our parks are packed. We need a little better distribution on a few of them that are in more remote areas. But having them free is one of our key attributes.
And I also wanted to talk about, so you mentioned that you filmed it over the course of a year, and that was so that you could get all the seasons.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite parts of the film was the part that featured the ice fishing, because activities that do not immediately come to mind when I think of Ohio activities are ice fishing and dog sledding, but both of them are in the movie. Can you tell me about the ice fishing that was featured? And it made me nervous walking out on the ice, but he seemed to know what he was doing.
And I think that is the key. You have to know what you're doing. So, you know, we don't want people going out for the first time, wandering out on the ice and drilling a hole. Go with someone who's experienced. We offer workshops through our wildlife division on how to go ice fishing, right? And so they teach you exactly what to do and what to look for, and they'll even take you out the first time. So they are very involved in people's safety. You know, things have changed. I think 30 years ago, I flew up to South Bass Island, and you would get in a giant pickup truck and drive out on the ice. And there were whole villages of ice fishing going on. It was really fun and exciting and really cool. You know, that's not so much the case anymore. Conditions have changed. But there is still lots of good ice fishing in Ohio. I mean, some you can do actually from a pier, because if the water's high enough, you can drill your hole right there and stay on the pier and do some ice fishing. But wandering out there, I agree. It's one of my favorite parts of the movie. Ice Bucket John and
his son. He's quite the character.
Yeah. They are obviously having a good time, and they are not about catching the fish. They're about being together and connecting and being in nature.
Well, and one last thing I'll ask you before we run out of time is, speaking of characters, people watching the film will also learn about Grandma Gatewood. Can you tell us about her importance to Ohio?
Yeah. So, I mean, she really set the tone for great trails and getting out to hike. I think the comment in the movie is a woman of true grit. Right. So she is the first female to thru-hike the Appalachian Trail, which seems far away. But she came right back to Ohio and said, hey, let's put together our own version of that. And that's the Buckeye Trail. So she was a key part of developing that. She led hikes every year down at Hocking Hills. And we still do the Grandma Gatewood hike. Mm-hmm. Her granddaughter is still active with the Buckeye Trail Association, which is fantastic. I hope she'll be joining us for some of the movie showings coming up. And I think she's just a great example of you can do it. I think people get intimidated by going outside if they don't do it all the time. Mm. And hopefully she's a way for people to connect.
And Jenny, what do you feel whenever you have people come to Shawnee State Park? Do they get a little intimidated by the hiking, or are they excited for it? Do you ever have to encourage them?
No, I don't think so. Everybody just loves to be outside that comes to a naturalist program. They're ready for it. And if I notice somebody's not going to want to do a longer hike, then we do a shorter walk. You know, I always try to accommodate the crowd who comes to the programs and switch things up if I need to make everybody comfortable and make sure they're having a good time.
So give me another example of a program you do. You mentioned short hikes. You mentioned identification and natural flowers and that kind of thing. What's another program you love to do?
A wild edible weekend is always fun. People love to know what they can eat in nature, what trees produce fruits and nuts. And we make a whole bunch, a big menu of things from like pawpaw bread or persimmon pudding, you know, all sorts of yummy things for people to taste and try. And that's always really popular. Everyone loves to go on a wild edible walk.
And Mary, just as one final question, Ohio State Parks have been recognized nationally as one of the very best park systems in the nation by the American Academy for Park and Recreation Administration. So what made Ohio stand out compared to the rest of the nation, do you think?
Yeah, we are so excited about that award. It's really meaningful. It's not one of those that they just toss around. So we've been after it for a while. But I think, first of all, that we're free. I think that's a key thing.
Yeah.
I think we showed that we have a wide variety of activities that everyone can access. So accessibility, whether you have a physical disability or a mental disability, or, you know, we want all of our offerings to be accessible to everyone. So like during the solar eclipse, we had a special way that people who are sight impaired could enjoy the eclipse using a sound machine. I think we showed our interest in understanding the history of Ohio, some of it through the perspective of the Native Americans. So we built in the last couple of years this beautiful Native American Center at the site of a Shawnee village in Greene County. And so we tell the story of that village through the eyes of the indigenous people who were there, as well as the story of the pioneers that many of the visitors can identify with. So we try to mix it all together. So I think those were some of the key initiatives, and focusing on our staff. So, you know, none of this would matter if we didn't have dedicated, talented staff who every day when they come to work, you know, their goal is, how do I improve the visitor experience? How do I help people experience this better? And that's whether you're someone who's cleaning the bathrooms or sitting in the office or doing a naturalist program. Every single one of those people have to be focused on that, and I think they are.
Well, congratulations on the film. Thanks. Yes, and remind people where they can see it.
They can see it at COSI coming up, but you can see it at any of the museum centers around Ohio. Cincinnati Museum Center, Dayton Boonshoff, Toledo Imagination Station, soon the Cleveland Museum of Natural History, and at many AMC theaters.
All right. So you look at, was there a special website? Or
there is. I think I'm probably going to say it wrong, and I didn't bring that note with me. But
if
you Google ODNR IMAX, you're going to find it.
Oh, the movie is called Ohio Wild at Heart, so you can find that list of the AMC theaters that are showing it. We've been speaking with Mary Mertz, director of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
And also with us today, Jenny Richards, a naturalist at Shawnee State Park, who appears in the film. Thanks for being here, Jenny.
No problem.
And coming up, we are going to hear from the Academy Award-nominated director of Ohio Wild at Heart. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Was made in 2015, encouraging parents to introduce peanuts to their infants early rather than waiting until they're a year or two old. Such a simple change, but too long in coming. Public health has some lessons to learn here about how to avoid being caught up in emotions and trends that could hurt more than they help. That's on the next On Point. Later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Political winds have shifted. Federal support for renewable energy projects and solar tax credits have taken a beating.
The good news is solar is still one of the cheapest forms of energy on the planet. You know, there's interesting headwinds and tailwinds that are coming at us all at once.
That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, starting at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Turn your old car into the news programs you love. Visit WOSU.org/cars and start the donation process today.
Support for WOSU comes from listeners and from Columbus Academy, an independent co-educational school for students age 3 through grade 12, where every child is seen, known, and understood, preparing them to take the world head on. Learn more at columbusacademy.org.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. The filmmaker behind the lens of the new film, Ohio Wild at Heart, is Academy Award-nominated director and cinematographer Greg McGilvery. Over the course of his career, he's helmed films spotlighting the great outdoors, from Mount Everest to coral reefs. And one of his specialties is making video look amazing for IMAX screens. Greg, welcome to All Sides.
Hey, thank you.
So according to Variety, you're the first documentary filmmaker to earn $1 billion in ticket sales, and that's quite an accomplishment. But I understand that that statistic embarrasses you. Why is that?
Well, you know, the most important thing to me is that about 90% of those dollars stay at the museum theaters where our films play. Mm-hmm. So like you're talking about Cincinnati Museum Center, that's they've been our partner in many, many films over the years, and they sell a lot of tickets when our films come there. And so it does embarrass me a little bit, but you know, I just love the fact that people enjoy our movies.
Over the course of your career, you've directed films that take you all around the world. So how did you become involved with directing Ohio Wild at Heart?
Oh, I love the experience. You know, you've just talked to Mary and Jenny, and you can hear in their voice the excitement that they have for the work that they do. We got involved in it by kind of happenstance. They'd seen our films and they liked them. And they talked to some of the Museum Center executives, and they said, well, these guys are really good. They try their hardest. We try to make every film better than the last one we've made. And I think with Ohio Wild at Heart, you know, it's true. The experience of being there in Ohio and seeing places that I don't think people outside Ohio have seen before. Mm-hmm. You know, Ohio is a hidden gem. And, it's not like some of the more famous places, Niagara Falls or Yosemite Valley. It's really, really amazing. And the fact that it came back from kind of a difficult place, you know, 50 years ago when the Cuyahoga River was catching fire, and they brought it back. They brought the animals back. They brought the lakes and the streams. It's a great story. It's a great conservation story for today. Makes you feel good about being alive.
Whenever you direct a film that's going to be an IMAX film, I'm sure it comes with its own set of challenges comparing to shooting a film that's non-IMAX. What do you have to do differently when you know it's going to be an IMAX movie?
Well, you have to remember that the audience is in the picture. They're sitting so close to the giant screen, and the screen image is so vivid and sharp and, you know, bright that it feels like real life. And so you have to basically pace the film differently. You allow images to stay on the screen for far longer than a regular video. You know, like most videos are cut so that the scenes are 5 to 10 seconds long. In IMAX, they could be 20 to 30 seconds long. Mm. And you want the audience to feel like they're there. They're paddling down the beautiful river and underneath these gorgeous trees. And it's an experience, more than a movie. It's an experience. And, you know, I think, you know, one of my favorite sequences is with Jenny Richards, and you heard in her voice the smile that she gets when she talks about what she does and what she's able to see every day, whether it be a little insect or a snake or a mammal. You know, she, when she goes out and takes kids and adults on these little trips, she imparts the joy of nature, the joy of living to all of them. She's nonstop. One of the best people I've ever met.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, she told me that you filmed her on a kayaking trip, and then I made a joke about taking expensive film equipment out in a kayak makes me very nervous. Yeah. But she said that you used a lot of drones for that part. Is that new to you, using drones for this kind of thing?
You know, it's changed filmmaking. Hmm. You know, we used to have to use these gigantic helicopters that, you know, to get close, we'd have to use telephoto lenses and big cameras with gyro stabilizers. Today, with drones, because they don't blast so much air, you can get closer to subjects without disturbing the environment, you know, blowing the trees over. And it's wonderful. You can actually see the people enjoying life, but the camera, it's like, you know, watching a football game now. Mm. All the camera works that they have with football games, same thing that we're doing with movies. And it's sensational. You know, you really do see so much more from the air.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the production of the new IMAX film, Ohio Wild at Heart, with film director Greg McGilvery. You directed your first IMAX film. It was titled To Fly back in 1976. So besides the drones, how has technology changed since you directed that first film?
Well, now we're able to shoot digital. Mm-hmm. And up to about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we shot everything on the gigantic 70mm film stock. Mm-hmm. And this film goes through the camera sideways so that you get an image that's 2 inches tall and 2¾ inches wide. Now that's the biggest frame of film ever used in any filmmaking, you know, since the origination of film in 1896. Mm. So it's been an amazing thing to be able to use IMAX film in all of these films that we've made, but now you can use digital. Digital has climbed to the point where there's enough pixels that it represents the same sharpness as that big film stock. And, you know, we're able to use smaller cameras, lighter cameras, get them in more interesting places and carry them further up the hill, you know, mm-hmm. up mountains, up trees, you know, getting wonderful vantage points for the audience to experience. Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned in the introduction, you've made films from some of the world's most amazing outdoor spaces, from Mount Everest to coral reefs. While they're beautiful, it sounds a little dangerous to me to film in these locations. Have you been in danger while filming?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've probably been close to death 3 or 4 times, and, you know, in helicopters, and I lost my partner in a helicopter crash, you know, right after we'd made To Fly. We were doing some commercials for Kodak up in the high mountains in the Sierras, and the helicopter in bad conditions crashed. And, you know, so, yeah, there's danger involved with making films that are adventure films. You know, the work that we do takes place in places that people don't normally go. Mm-hmm. And that's the joy of what we try to do. And that's what the audience loves about our filmmaking, is that it's not ordinary filmmaking. It's exceptionally different filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And so you see, you know, we took the IMAX camera all the way to the top of Everest to show the world what it's like to be up there in IMAX. And, mm-hmm. you know, you can see 40 miles from the top of Everest. You can see mountains way, way away. And it's when you show that to the audience on the giant IMAX screen, it gives them chills. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to do with all of our films, including this wonderful film about Ohio.
Yeah, a little less dangerous here in Ohio. But were you, I noticed shots in Ohio Wild at Heart from all four seasons. So were you working, you had to have been working on the film for at least a year. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we had film shoots probably 8 different times. You know, so you set everything up and, you know, get everything ready. And there are a few sequences that we weren't able to film that we really wanted to film, like ice sailing. Mm. The ice just wasn't thick enough, the 2 winters that we had. But it's always, you know, you have these goals when you set up a film shoot and a script, and some of those things come through and some don't. And a lot of them turn out better than you ever expected. It's like the ice fishing sequence is one of my favorite sequences in the movie. And who would think that ice fishing would be unbelievably sentimental and wonderful?
I love the ice fishing sequence, too. We were just talking about that. We're down to only 2 minutes left, but I wanted to know, did you have a favorite part? You mentioned you really loved meeting Jenny from Shawnee State Park. You like the ice fishing. Was there any other part of this filming that you enjoyed?
You know, I actually liked McGee Marsh because it's such a quiet, intimate sequence about warblers. And I knew nothing about warblers. Mm. You know, we don't have them out here in California. And they are the most charming birds. And these birders who come every year to the biggest week of birding in all of America, they come to count as many warbler species as they can. And it's just a joy that you see in people's eyes when they see a new warbler that they haven't seen before. And that for me, you know, it connects kind of the intellectual side, the aspirational side, and also just the adventure side of nature. How much nature gives to us as humans. We forget that often. And this film points it out. And people like Mary and Jenny, you know, I have to say that they're some of the best people in the world because they bring this to the public for free.
We have been speaking with Greg McGilvery, director of the IMAX film Ohio Wild at Heart. Thank you so much for joining us today, Greg.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us.